Decking, show number 530 for Thursday, August the 3rd, 1977. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and continuing to blame all of my problems on public education. Tonight, we have an Are You. What's up, Are You?
Bunch, man. Just enjoying this ride we call Planet Earth. A way off. Might as well enjoy it.
I think Alex Jones had it right at this point. It's Prison Planet. Unfortunately, yeah. They're not trapped in here with me. I'm trapped in here with them.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's another interesting week.
Well, I don't know. I think the guy beating the fuck out of the robber with the stick was hilarious. I think more shop back. Owners ought to take that approach.
Yeah, it'll end up going too far. I'm noticing more and more, we're not a species that does things by half.
Well, you could always go back to the rule of thumb. You're allowed to beat somebody robbing your store with a rod as long as it's not larger than your thumb.
Get some rebar out in the shed, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm down with that. It's not thicker than my thumb.
That's what I was thinking too, actually.
See what I mean? We're not a species that does it by halves, man. We instantly take it to the point where we're killing people.
That's one of the gags I always have about Star Trek, is they're like, oh, these Klingons, we're always so worried about. Dude, if it was us today versus fucking Klingons, the Klingons would be like, no, thank you. Those people are crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, Star Federation was a very pacifist group, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
It's one of the reasons I didn't like Star Trek.
So, then you had Stargate, the opposite, killing. Where they just went everywhere with guns, and everybody was just kind of like, oh, okay, hi, how you doing? Didn't think a damn thing of it.
Yeah, I look at Stargate almost like the conquistadors. Yeah, like, oh, there's a worse tribe out there than us. Yeah, we'll join yours. You guys are pretty fucking bad, but not as bad as the Gould.
That's pretty much what it was, though, because by the end of the show, they were building bases and, you know, taking resources off people and shit. I mean, it was...
Yeah. It was a very conquistador fucking story, man. It was good. I didn't mind the first couple of seasons. The first movie was good, the first couple of seasons, but every, like, Stargate Atlantis and shit like that, I didn't even touch that stuff.
Oh, I liked Atlantis. I mean, it had gotten silly at that point, so it was no longer serious sci-fi. I don't know that it was ever serious sci-fi, but you know what I mean. It wasn't like, I don't think it was ever hard sci-fi, but...
I mean, it definitely the lore for wormhole-based portal technology.
Oh, absolutely. So, although I'm getting back into, I'm going back and reading, looking up classic cyberpunk stuff. I mean, of course, Snow Crash was always a classic, but I hadn't actually read Neuromancer, so I went and got that one, finished that one up. So,
I've never finished Snow Crash.
You never finished Snow Crash?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the ending's.
I should get the audio book. That's what I should do.
Yeah. Well, that's what I did for Neuromancer, because I can listen to it while I'm driving. So, but that's how I consume most of my books these days, is audiobooks while I'm driving.
Yeah, well, I'll have a designated race car again in a month or two, so maybe I can get some e-books done.
Well, if nothing else, you can listen to those while you're doing the wrench, so.
Yeah. But, oh, and what a lot of wrench time it's going to take, too.
Well, they always do. They always do. Hell, fuck, my fucking 3D print farm is taking wrench time. I was expecting to whip that together and get it done. Nope. I don't know why I'm surprised. I've been doing that long enough, too. So, I mean, shit. Anyways, I guess we should probably talk about, articles rather than stalling to see if Madman or Fox is going to show up.
Yeah.
So
maybe they decided to go on holidays together.
Well, Fox did say he was packing his bags.
All right, first story.
This one.
Imagine my shock on this one.
Yeah, we kind of predicted this ages ago. Although I didn't think it'd be Tesla. I figured it would be, you know, was it BMW who was locking out like the heated seats and shit?
Yeah, extra horsepower with Mercedes, things like that, extra headlight illumination, things like that.
I figured it'd be one of them before Tesla, because Tesla's got their stuff so interconnected.
Tesla's the most hated car company in the world right now. Philip Morris has a better ESG score than Tesla.
Well, there was something about they're starting to go after Tesla for the ratings of the distance not being accurate. Like
that, they're unreliable. They don't work in the cold. You can't repair them. They don't last longer than 7 years. There's no aftermarket resale value on electric vehicle. I can go on, dude.
Well, that last one surprises me, because I know people were selling Teslas that admittedly were only a couple of years old for more than people paid for them a few years ago.
Well, outside the initiated, not many people realize that these vehicles don't last more than 7 years. We've been talking about this shit for years, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it helps that I'm into cars, so there's a few other guys in the group. So we look at this stuff, and there's more problems than just the running time, the price point, fixing it, resale. There's the danger of having one of these cars in an underground car park for fire.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
So could you imagine, say, 60 electric vehicles, all different makes and models, one catches fire in a bay 3 stories below ground?
Well, think about this. And this is something serious, easy to visualize and fairly serious. These things use lithium-ion battery packs, and they're stored on the bottom of the car. Now, they do that for weight distribution, because you have to. Fine. But we've all seen the swollen cell phone or the swollen laptop where the battery's puffed up. Well, if that happens in a Tesla, it's going to puff up down, because that's the only real place it has to expand. Well, that I guess it could bend the cabin in, but I think it's more likely to go down, which means you're more likely to puncture an inflated battery. And, well, I mean, I found a freaking inflated lithium pack in the parts bin earlier today that's currently sitting in a tin in the garage till I can dispose of it. It's not hot, but it's like you can't do anything with it once they've blown up like that.
Yeah, so, no, the only thing you do is encase it in concrete.
So there's a battery drop place up the road that I'm going to take it to this weekend to, you know, get rid of it. But I'm going to keep it in a freaking tin, because I don't know what else to do with it until then. So,
You got any sand?
No, I don't. I don't think.
Earth?
Well, yeah.
Full of earth in there or something like that, just while you're transporting it, make yourself feel better.
Yeah. I mean, I shoved it in a mint tin because it wasn't a very big pack, and then wrapped that in aluminum foil, which is probably just made a bomb, but...
Pressurized bomb, great.
Yeah. At the time, I was thinking, oh, if it catches fire, this won't spread. It'll be like, you know, it'll just get hot. So it's out on the concrete in the garage, but it's like, well...
you've done your best.
So... But,
there are a lot more problems than your vehicle getting hacked.
Well, that, you know, that's the gag of it. Like, you know, the one I just bought. Oh, fuck it. I got a Bronco Sport, right? I don't care. I did some research on the thing before I bought it. The engine and the powertrain's all based off the Escape, so it's not a new design.
No.
A lot of this Tesla shit is new.
Yeah.
And it's being made by engineers who, most of them haven't built cars before. Now, I know they did hire a lot of engineers who had worked on cars when they were designing it, but... You know, it's a lot of it's just software.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's poorly written software, too.
Well, that's what we're getting ready to talk about here. This is from Electrek.co. A group of hackers have exposed an exploit that can unlock Tesla's software-locked features worth up to $15,000. Free heated seats and free self-driving package. Software lock features that need to be activated by the owner paying or subscribing to a service are becoming increasingly popular in the auto industry. Okay, no, they're not popular in the auto industry. They're popular with the automakers. Nobody else likes that shit. Tesla has been on board with that trend since very early, since it produced virtually all of its cars with the same hardware, and owners can unlock features through software updates. This includes features like heated seats, acceleration boost, and even Tesla's full self-driving package, which costs $15,000. Good God, I didn't know it cost that much. It creates a market for people trying to get around the software lock. A group of security researchers at TU Berlin announced they had managed to exploit a weakness in the onboard computer to unlock these features. Quote, Tesla has been known for their advanced and well-integrated car computers, from serving mundane entertainment purposes to fully autonomous driving capabilities. More recently, Tesla has started using this well-established platform to enable in-car purchases, not only for additional connectivity features, but even for analog features like faster acceleration or rear heated seats. As a result, hacking the embedded car computer could allow the users to unlock these features without paying. Unquote. They plan to unveil the result of their exploit in a presentation called Jailbreaking an Electric Vehicle in 2023, or what it means to hotwire Tesla's x86-based seat heater, next week. The hack requires physical access to the car, and it involves a, quote, voltage fault injection attack on the AMD-based... Okay, for anybody who doesn't know what a voltage fault injection attack is, that's bridging a pin to crash out the CPU.
Hey. You actually physically have to bridge it.
Yeah, you have to go grab most likely a 5-volt rail somewhere on the mainboard and touch it to a pin on the CPU to crash it out.
Get it a hard reset.
Right, so that way you can load your own code in it. Actually, that's not terribly dissimilar from what Switch mod chips do. They intentionally crash out the CPU to get it to reload after Nintendo's locked bootloader so that they can load
their code. Similar to what we were talking about with Major yesterday in that laptop he was using.
Oh, yeah. Trying to unlock the BIOS.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're intentionally causing a chip to crash out so that you can load your own code and get it to load that instead of the lockdown code from the from the embedded system. Wow. Quote, for this, we are using a known voltage fault injection attack against the AMD secure processor, serving as the root of trust in the system. Okay, so it's not the CPU, it's the AMD equivalent of a TPM chip. First, we present how we use the low-cost off-the-shelf hardware to mount the glitching attack to subvert the ASP's early boot code. Then we show how to reverse engineer the boot flow to gain a root shell on their recovery and production Linux distribution. Unquote. So, low-cost off-the-shelf hardware, probably a Pi Pico or an Arduino, maybe an ESP32. The group of hackers claims that their Tesla jailbreak is unpatchable and allows to run arbitrary software on the infotainment. They add, quote, second, it will enable us to extract an otherwise vehicle-unique hardware-bound RSA key used to authenticate and authorize a car in Tesla's internal service network, unquote. Oh, dear. I didn't think about that one. So, okay, you've heard of cell phone cloning, right?
Yeah.
You're going to car clone.
You're cloning a car.
You're going to clone yours onto somebody who's paid for all the bells and whistles, and now you have all the bells and whistles too, because it thinks their car is your car. Oh, geez, this could cause all kinds of fun problems. Because they use a lot of apps and stuff on phones to control things too.
I'm thinking, like, one car gets reported stolen, two cars get shut down.
That's possible. Also, too, given what may happen with that, if you've cloned somebody else's car,
GPS signal.
Yeah, well, oh, it would mess with it because they would be getting conflicting reports saying the same car is in two different locations.
Uh huh.
But also, if somebody goes and tries to do the remote start for their car and you've cloned their key, your car will remote start too.
This is going I mean, is the first couple of times someone uses this maliciously, yeah, it's going to cause some issues.
Well, the thing is, though, they're right. There's not much Tesla can do to stop this because it's a hardware flaw with the chip. And to be frank, now, I'm not an electrical engineer. I dabble with the soldering iron and occasionally manage to not burn myself. I don't know how you fix somebody taking a jumper wire and crashing the chip.
You can't. The only way to fix it is to shut down both cars once two identical vehicles are detected in the system.
Yeah. Well, actually, there is a hardware fix to this, and I'm afraid it's what Tesla's going to start doing. Pot the entire CPU in epoxy. Just the whole board. I mean, it's basically an Intel NUC back there.
Yeah.
They'll just pot the whole damn thing in epoxy so you can't do that. Which also means if the thing ever messes up, they just have to replace the whole module. Which, granted, I think most automakers do that anyways.
Well, how big's the module that they're going to dumb them up?
The actual computer? It's a mini board. It's like an Intel NUC. It's like a couple decks of cards.
So roughly price point?
Yeah.
For that?
Maybe $600-$700.
Remove, refit? Just put your own in.
Well, if they take one of these and dump out all the software, oh, now that's an interesting thought. If they dump out Tesla's software because it's a Linux-based OS, well, you could theoretically point the car at a different server stack. You'd have to reverse engineer Tesla's protocols. They're probably not using anything too esoteric, though. I mean, it's probably all web-based API shit, right?
Yeah.
So, there's somebody having access to one half of the system, but, you know, especially if they could run their own software, they could potentially monitor the protocols that Tesla is using, write their own servers, and then just point the car not at Tesla's network, but at their own. That's an interesting thought. Or, like you said, swap it out, just put a much more powerful system in there to run everything. Although, as you say, you know, the batteries and the things don't last, and I know a lot of the first-generation Teslas, like, people were destroying them because it cost more to replace the battery than the car was worth.
Yeah.
So...
And they thought about just swapping out the whole computer.
Yeah. Well, you'll probably see similar things. Well, a lot of Tesla's features, though, like that self-driving shit, it's reliant on connecting to those back-end servers to do that. The car doesn't have enough CPU grunt on board to do that kind of stuff. I don't think. Maybe I'm misremembering how it works.
I've never messed with one, so...
Maybe I've misremembered. It's been forever since I've read up on this stuff, but I thought that it was mostly running by wire over the cloud when you did the self-driving car stuff.
Yeah, I have no idea, man. I've never even been in an electric car. I've been to a Tesla dealership to have a look, but yeah.
I've got a couple of coworkers who have them, and they establish the virtues, but.
Dude, it's like early Prius drivers. Remember the smug assholes?
Oh my God.
I drive a Prius. I'm saving the planet.
I will never forget when I was going to buy my first car. That was mine. Like, you know what I mean? You know,
yeah.
The car that I bought, I chose. We had a neighbor at the time who was real big on Priuses. And it was just literally, so what Prius are you going to buy? Well, I don't know if I'm going to buy a Prius or not. No, you're going to buy a Prius. No,
I respect myself, sir. No, I'm not.
I don't know. I haven't driven one. I mean, I might. And like, yeah, you're going to buy one. I know this dealer. You want to go talk to them. And they were trying to set me up like you were going to buy a Prius. And it's like, why don't you back the hell off? So that was awkward.
Yeah.
But anyways... we're going to start seeing more of this as these manufacturers lock stuff up behind subscriptions. And what I'm actually waiting for is the first time you start seeing them taking people who sell mod chips for cars to court. I mean, if
Nintendo
does it, you think Tesla's not going to do it for the first company selling a kit to get the heated seats for free?
Yeah, I know. But backyard jailbreaking will be a thing.
Oh, absolutely. Especially if they are doing it with shit like Arduinos, because they're cheap. You get them on Amazon for nothing.
I mean, the worst part about it as a car thief, you've just got to keep educating yourself. It just never stops.
Yeah, lifelong education in technology. Oh, are you a technologist? No, I'm a car thief. Yeah. Next article.
Yeah.
All right. This next one's from Torrent Freak. YTMP3 is suing competitors for sending fraudulent Google DMCA notices. The DMCA takedown process allows copyright holders to report infringing content and have it removed or taken down. It is a powerful tool that takes millions of URLs and links offline every day. In most cases, this happens for a good reason, but some takedown efforts are more questionable. Fraudsters have previously used false DMCA notices to target competitors. The strategy can be particularly effective when notices are sent to Google, as the search engine effectively downranks domains that are frequently mentioned in takedown requests. Notices sent by legitimate music industry groups such as the BPI and the RIAA contain claims that YTMP3.NU violates the DMCA's anti-circumvention provision. However, the YouTube ripping service also views itself as a victim of bogus takedown notices sent by one or more competitors. In an effort to curtail the abuse, earlier this year, the site sent a cease and desist letter to Google, asking the search engine to begin verifying senders of DMCA notices. In addition, YTMP3.NU also asked for a litigation hold in anticipation of future legal action. The letter didn't prompt Google to launch an official verification procedure, but the YouTube ripper did follow up on its legal threat, although Google itself isn't a direct target. In response to a series of allegedly fraudulent notices, yesterday the operator of YTMP3.NU and Y2Mate.NU filed a complaint in federal court in California. The complaint alleges that sites are being targeted by one or more competitors with the aim of disappearing the site from search results. So, it keeps on going, but essentially, they're suing. Who did it say they were sending the suing? Creative Code. It's not Google. Where'd it go? I was trying to skip through the article. Yeah, YouTube ripping sites apparently operate in a competitive industry. In recent weeks, some unknown person or persons targeted the YTMP3.NU and Y2Mate.NU domain names with takedown notices without proper cause, the complaint alleges. The defendants are not known by name yet and referred to as Does for now. Okay, that's what it was. So they're trying to do the same trick that the copyright lawyers do, where they sue an IP address, basically, and then they're going to go to Google and say, hey, you need to tell us who is sending these because we're suing them. So, but, and you know, this has gone round and round with the YouTube ripping, because it's not the first time we've seen a tool for YouTube ripping targeted by copyright. But the lawsuit is just funny because they think it's competitors doing it to them, not just the RIAA. Which
that's valid. I mean, it's dirty and underhanded, but
well,
that's business.
I think what it means, and the reason I wanted to talk about the article, is I think it means that we've completely abandoned any notion of the courts being for legitimate purposes, and it's just straight up lawfare against people you don't like at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's vindictive, childlike behavior.
Well, and when you look into it, doing anything with a lawsuit is so prohibitively expensive, it's no wonder only companies are doing it. Because, you know, just somebody steals $1,000 from you in contract fraud, trying to get it back, it costs you three times that in legal fees before you even see a dime, and that's just to prove that they did it. So, yeah, I mean, they don't even bother with that kind of small claims stuff, which is why a lot of people do it. But,
yeah,
you know, but then stuff like this where it's like, oh, the competitors are sending DMCA complaints. Well, one, are you don't actually know that because you don't know who they are. But, you know, so you only suspect it. But two, trying to figure out the identity of people sending complaints this way is just I mean, God, how many hours are you burning in lawyer fees to do that? Unless it's ChatGPT and LegalZoom, I don't know. I guess it could be.
Who knows, man?
Oh, geez, Well, I've got something on ChatGPT for later, but I mean, that's something else. Is if we do get the AIs doing proper legal briefs and filings, the amount of bullshit lawsuits that just get churned out is going to go skyrocketing. And I guess there's nothing to stop people from doing it now, but if you can have a bot scripting it.
It'll be no different than the 80s, dude. Remember all the fucking, every kid went and become a lawyer?
Well, I don't know. It might be a lot less cocaine.
I don't know. Lawfare's not new.
No, it's not, but it does feel like it's getting out of hand lately. Next article is from Ars Technica. Microsoft accidentally leaks internal utility for testing new Windows 11 features.
I find the word accidentally strange.
When Microsoft releases new test builds of Windows, there's usually a handful of features that are announced, but only actually enabled for a small subset of testers. Sometimes it's because the company is A/B testing a couple of different versions of the same thing, or because Microsoft wants to roll out major changes to a few users before rolling them out to everyone. Users normally have little control over whether new features actually appear in their Windows beta installs, but Microsoft has internal software called Staging Tool that its own developers can use to switch things on and off themselves. And now Staging Tool has leaked to the public thanks to a bug bash the company is running this week to find and fix problems before the next big batch of new Windows feature releases this fall. As reported by The Verge, some bug bash participants were sent on quests that explicitly mentioned using the Staging Tool to turn on specific features. Those quests and the tool itself have been removed from Microsoft servers, but Staging Tool is already being freely distributed among Windows enthusiasts who want more control over the features they see. Microsoft's official link is dead, and you should be careful when using third-party download links for any kind. A Staging Tool has a lot in common with a third-party app called VIVE Tool, which testers have used to switch on announced but unavailable and as yet unannounced features in new Windows builds. Microsoft's recent "when they're done" approach to testing and releasing new Windows features means that there will be more of these features to find than there used to be. Like Vive Tools, Staging Tools, a command line utility that enables and disables individual features using feature ID strings. Vive Tool includes a search feature that can be used to discover new feature strings to turn on and off if you can't find the exact stream or feature you want elsewhere. This fall's batch of Windows updates will be headlined by Windows Copilot, Learn Linux, and many of Microsoft's products to pick up the new ChatGPT powered generative AI features. Learn Linux. But people who don't care about the AI features will likely find things to do as well, including expanded support for different compressed file formats, an Outlook app that replaces the built-in Windows 10 era mail and calendar apps, improved support for passkeys, and further fixes for the Windows 11 taskbar, among other things. They're literally hooking Windows 11 into ChatGPT. I guess that's replacing Cortana. Learn Linux. No thoughts?
No, not really. I don't know enough about Windows 11. Mainly because I just don't care. I haven't looked at it yet.
They're going full on, you know, full on mobile operating system with it. They want to collect your user data. They want everything tied to online accounts. You know, you have a lot less control over it. I've had to use it in a few systems now, and it is a frustrating operating system because it's like Windows, like you know, the Windows 10 and stuff like that, it's still there. And if you can, you can strip a lot of the stuff out and get it back down to a usable operating system. But Microsoft just layers so much of their shit in there. And it's like, I don't want to sign up for OneDrive. I don't want, but I mean, like the operating system by default will try to hook you into a OneDrive account. And if you didn't set one up, it'll set you up with a free 5 gig account. And once you've put more than 5 gig worth of stuff on your hard drive that it has synced up to the Microsoft servers, whether you knew it or not, it won't let you put anything new on your hard drive because you're out of space in OneDrive.
Yeah.
Fuck.
You've had firsthand experience playing with that.
Yeah. Microsoft, fuck you. I should not have to pay a subscription to use my own fucking hard drive. I mean, that shit just pissed me off so bad when I figured out what was going on.
Yeah, everything we've ever discussed around Windows 11, I was just like, fuck no.
And the bad thing is Windows 10 goes out of support next year, so it's like, well, fuck, now what? Learn Linux!
It looks like I've got an unpatched machine online.
Ugh. Well, they'll probably end up extending support for 10.
Yeah, I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. I'm just getting so fucking frustrated with the internet.
Why don't so many companies that are just now switching to 10 and 10 goes out next year?
I don't know. It's just less and less to do online every day. So fucking sterile now.
Well, like I said, you know, like I've said before, we lost the internet. It's not.
Oh yeah.
It's not for hackers or free thinkers anymore. It is a corporate tool of commerce. No, sorry. Go ahead, Ori.
No. I've got a thought, but it's too complicated just to spit out. I've just got to work on it a bit more. Otherwise, it's going to sound stupid.
Okay. It's just
around the idea of losing the internet.
Well, I mean, the original internet is still under it, but it's just nobody seems to care.
It's not accessible through Google. DuckDuckGo's pretty shitty now. Yeah, I know it's there. It's just getting to it.
Well, the bad part
Let's do the next one.
Yeah. Next article is from Torrent Freak. I'm just going to read the short version of this because, of course, President Putin has signed off on legal amendments that threaten to destroy online anonymity, crush free speech, and stifle innovation. Starting this year, internet platforms must verify new users' identities via state-approved systems before granting access. VPN circumvention advice will constitute a crime. Certain Gmail use will be banned, and non-state-approved hosting companies will be rendered illegal.
No different to what we're going to be doing in 2025, real-time ID.
Yeah, that's effectively what Russia is doing.
We're getting the exact same thing. And that's why I said I don't think I'm going to be online after that.
Well,
yeah, there's not much difference. They use the scary word Putin's doing this. Well, we're getting the exact same thing.
Well, I mean, they're literally making it a crime to explain how to use a VPN to somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, hosting companies must attain state approval. Everything must be registered. I mean, jeez.
We've been banging on about it for years. This is the run home. We're on the run home now for full control of the internet. No more anonymity. Once that happens, you'll see the digital currency push.
Yeah.
And then real state ID will come in, which will be the global state or whatever the fuck they've called it now. They keep changing the name.
Agenda 32 or something like that.
I don't know what they're calling it now, but it'll be the one where you have your magic passport that has all your info on it for every government to swap around and shit like that. Real ID and all your biometrics and.
No, it won't. You'll have a little card with a barcode on it. Well, probably a QR code. And all of that shit will be in a government database.
Oh yeah, you'll have to have your QR code on your phone, because God knows you can't go anywhere without your government mandated tracking device. Yeah, no, they're just jumping a little bit quicker with their real ID.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I was just...
Dude, we're going to go back to hanging pieces of paper around in the community to fucking meme.
Amateur radio, I guess.
Not in my books. But anyway.
So... All right, next article. Maybe we kind of blazed through all those. That's all right.
Well, there's not much there, man. You know, like, apart from the non-approved state website, like, what the fuck would that be?
Be any hosting that they don't have a back door into, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. So there's not much to discuss because you can get there pretty quickly. Anything we don't control, we don't allow.
It's like, you think that's going to shut down the Russian business network? God, no. No, 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 no. It's just the government's going to flat out take their cut. That's what that's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the malware and shit still coming out of Russia? It's still going to... They're not stopping that. They just get their slice.
Uh-huh. Like, do you think the Indian call centers are ever going to go away? Nope.
Not unless they actually make the phone companies, you know, do something about it. But they don't want to because they're making too much money off of it.
They're making money off it, yeah.
Yeah. So unless they come in and actually say, okay, phone companies, if you don't, you know, do something about this, we're fining you. It's never going to get fixed. And of course, they've got too many people in the actual, you know, the actual FCC and shit like that, that they're never going to actually crack down on the phone companies to make the robocallers stop.
Oh no.
But they will occasionally.
It's a captured regulator.
Yeah. But they will occasionally do token efforts like the one I'm getting ready to read here from Ars Technica.
Okay.
And that's again, okay. These are token efforts. They're just getting the people who make too much noise. Because they don't want it to stop. They just don't want it to be so annoying that people demand something happen. The Federal Communications Commission today issued a record fine of $299,997,000 against a robocall operation that specialized in auto warranty scam calls. The FCC announced, calling it the largest illegal robocall operation the agency has ever investigated. Again, this is everyone calling you, you know, about your car insurance, which has stopped, by the way. I don't know if you noticed that. But, you know, it's because they made too much noise. You know, again, they only went after them because everyone was getting these and they were really obnoxious. A quote, an internal network or an international network of companies violated federal statutes and the commission's regulations when they executed a scheme to make more than 5 billion robocalls to more than 50 million phone numbers during a 3-month span in 2021. Including violating federal spoofing laws by using more than 1 million different caller ID numbers in an attempt to disguise the true origin of the robocalls and trick victims into answering the phone, unquote, the FCC said. The proposed $300 million penalty the FCC proposed a $300 million penalty in December of 2022. The FCC said it, quote, offered the parties a chance to respond, which they did not do, resulting in today's unprecedented fine, unquote. The FCC has generally had little success in collecting fines issued against robocallers. The commission can refer unpaid fines to the Justice Department for enforcement. So this is token on paper, like I was saying. It's not doing anything. Because all these companies are overseas. They're just going to give the FCC the finger. Or, you know, bend over and give them the goatsy, one of the two. And, you know, 300 million might as well be 100 million billion. They're never going to pay it. The FCC has said the robocalling scheme was a multinational operation that did business under various names, including Sumco Panama, Virtual Telecom, Davis Telecom, Geist Telecom, Fugle Telecom, Tech Direct, Mobi Telecom, and Posting Express. Quote, since at least 2018, this enterprise operated a complex scheme designed to facilitate the sale of vehicle service contracts under the false and misleading claims of selling auto warranties. Unquote. The FCC said, quote, two of the central players in the operation, Roy M. Cox and Aaron Michael Jones, were under lifetime bans against making telemarketing calls following lawsuits by the Federal Trade Commission and the state of Texas, unquote. The FCC said it took action to block the robocalling scheme last year by directing, quote, all U.S.-based voice service carrier providers to cease carrying traffic associated with certain members of the enterprise. As a result, these illegal auto warranty robocalls dropped by 99%, unquote. See, again, the phone companies can actually do it, but you have to have the you have to have somebody in the government willing to make them do it, because otherwise they're making too much money off connecting the calls. You know, yeah, they're making money on the robocalls. You know, it might be only a few cents per call, you know, whether you even answer the phone or not. Same thing with the VoIP providers. The FCC has generally, the FCC coordinated last year's action with the Ohio Attorney General's office, which filed a lawsuit against Jones, Cox, and others involved in the alleged robocalling scheme. Cox was banned from telemarketing in a 2013 settlement with the FTC, which accused him of sending illegal robocalls offering credit card interest rate re-education programs, extended automobile warranties, and home security systems, unquote. At the time, the FTC said that Cox was issued a $1.1 million civil penalty that would be suspended due to his inability to pay, unquote. In 2017, the FTC obtained a similar telemarketing ban on Jones. He was also fined $2.7 million, but as with Cox, the fine was, quote, suspended based on his inability to pay, unquote. If they don't have the money to pay these fines, what are you doing with the telemarketing schemes?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
I can't pay the fine. I can't pay the fine. Just change the logo of the company and move offices. And rinse and repeat, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because you've already figured out they're not going to make you pay the fucking fine. So where's the incentive not to repeat the same crime?
Again, we ought to send shop owners after them with big sticks.
Yeah.
You know, you can't pay the fine? Okay, a public beating for you. That's medieval. Well, I don't care.
that was a funny thing. They're like, oh, well, you're going to... Alex Jones, you owe $100 trillion. Yeah, you're back on air the next day. Fuck, that did not work. Guys, what are we doing wrong here? You know what I mean?
Well, these numbers don't mean anything after a certain point.
Well, that's what I mean. They're like, that's Alex Jones. The thing with him is, like, okay, they're not putting him in prison, and the fine's deferred until he can afford to pay it. Fuck it. Keep doing what I'm doing. No, there's no incentive to stop.
Yeah, why weren't these guys in prison if they couldn't pay the damn fine?
I'm saying these telemarketers are 10 times worse than fucking Alex Jones.
Oh, like,
I'd rather listen to Alex Jones than a telemarketer call. But at least I have a choice with Alex Jones. He's not cold calling me to see if I want to go and watch his show.
And he tends to be funny.
Yes, and unfortunately, he's probably 7% right. And everyone should be afraid that he's 7% right.
Hang on. Where is it? I got a button. Where is it? It's on this tab.
Well, you mean like what Jeffrey Epstein did with the Clintons?
There we go.
Yeah. Now I've lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
No, it's just, there's no accountability. You know what I mean? Why wouldn't you just go start next telemarketing thing?
Why weren't they in jail if they couldn't pay their fines? They obviously had them.
Well, if it's in India, dude, it's corrupt as fuck.
Well, these guys were in, like, Texas, in Ohio.
That's weird. I would have thought the American rule of law was a little better, but... have been following some legal matters, and doesn't look like the rule of law really fucking matters anymore.
Yeah. According to FCC's announcement, the newer Cox Jones, quote, enterprise violated a multitude of robocall prohibitions by making pre-recorded voice calls to mobile phones without prior express consent, placing telemarketer calls without written consent, dialing numbers included on the National Do Not Call Registry, failing to identify the caller at the start of the message, and failing to provide a callback number that allowed consumers to opt out of future calls. The calls also violated spoofing laws by using misleading caller ID to disguise the enterprise's role and prompt consumers to answer, unquote. Sumco allegedly sent robocall traffic over Avid Telecom, an Arizona-based company that was sued by nearly every U.S. state in May. Okay, when you get nearly every state attorney to agree on something, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
The state's lawsuit said that Avid, quote, chose profit over running a business that conforms to federal and state law by routing billions of illegal robocalls to millions of U.S. residents on the Do Not Call registry. The lawsuit alleged that Avid Telecom had direct knowledge that Sumco was sending them illegal call traffic. But you're right, the call centers are, you know, they're not based in the states. So, you know, even if you've got these guys who are running it, somebody else will do it. I mean, like you said, the call centers exist, the technology exists, they're not going away anytime soon. And the FTC can't do or the FCC can't do jack about it because they're in India or Russia or wherever the hell. So, Philippines, I think, was one. So, yeah.
Be careful fucking around in the Philippines, man. They do take their law and order very seriously.
Well, maybe that's why I only think I remember reading it. Maybe it was somewhere else.
That wouldn't surprise me if there are call centers there, but it wouldn't be my first place to host a legal call center. You know what I mean?
Yep.
They've got some pretty serious penalties up there in the Philippines, and they don't fuck around. So, yeah, I'd be picking, you know, India, Pakistan. As long as I can afford to bribe these people, you're good.
So the last article I have... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, and then next story.
Last article I have for tonight is from BusinessInsider.com. Kenyan moderators who review content for OpenAI's ChatGPT said they were made to read graphic text passages, paid poorly, and offered limited support in a new report by The Guardian. So you remember that article?
You know what they should, you know what they should have done?
What's
started
that?
Fucking each other in the stairwells and smoking weed in the toilet.
Well, I was going to say, it's like that article we read about, I think it was, was it Facebook or Microsoft?
Microsoft, yeah. Forcing their employees were so fucking depressed they were screwing each other in stairwells and getting high.
Well, you remember I when I first skimmed it, I thought it was a Snowflake story and we were gonna make, and I was gonna make fun of it until we actually read it, and
had
then
to
I was
look
like
at the,
depressed.
Yeah, like I would do the job, but only if you let me take a hard drive in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The moderators were employed by Sama, a California-based data annotation company that had a contract with OpenAI and offered data labeling services to Google and Microsoft. Sama ended its partnership with OpenAI in February of 2022. Time reports that the California company cut ties with OpenAI because of concerns about working with potentially illegal content for AI training. And in other words, they saw the writing on the wall and wanted out because OpenAI is getting sued by like a bunch of companies right now for this. A moderator who reviewed content for OpenAI, Mofat Onkiai, told The Guardian that he often read up to 700 text passages daily. He said that many of these passages centered on sexual violence and that the work caused him to grow paranoid about those around him. He said this damaged his mental state and his relationship with his family. And again, I know we were originally joking about it, but if you think about it, if somebody is sitting there reading, you know, that's all they're reading all day long is this sick the most sick and twisted shit that people are pumping into
fucking torture porn and shit like that.
Yeah.
I've stumbled across certain things in the day where I was just going, yeah, fuck that. And I can't get it out of my head for a couple of days. You know what I mean? I could imagine having a fucking, you have all those fucking snakes in your head every fucking night and your kids coming up to you and you're like, oh my God. I couldn't do it.
Another former moderator, Alex Karu, told the news outlet that what he saw in the job, quote, destroyed me completely, unquote. He said that he became introverted and his physical relationship with his wife deteriorated. Representatives for OpenAI and Sama did not immediately respond to a request for comment. OpenAI did not provide The Guardian with a statement. The moderators
Somebody got some sexual demons. He's found stuff that he's like, holy shit, I didn't know I was interested in that. My wife just is not interesting anymore.
He looks down.
He's broken.
He looks down, realizes the bulge. Well, shit.
Yep. This is a problem.
Yeah. So somebody's going to need a copy of Are You There, God? Anyways. The moderators told The Guardian that the content was up for review the content that was up for review often depicted graphic scenes of violence, child abuse, bestiality, murder, and sexual abuse. And again,
if
you know,
you're
this
lucky, you get them all in one.
You know, you think about it, right? You know, you've got one person who's got a kink, and they go on ChatGPT, and they pour it all out, and that's it. But that's just one. This is somebody being subject to everybody's kink all of the time.
Yeah.
You know, even if the person doing it isn't, you know, doesn't think it's that big of a deal, and it may not even be, it might just be fantasy for them. But think about having to read all that all of the time. Jesus.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's going to fucking... You're going to get snakes in your head, man, and they're going to manifest into reality.
In ways that you cannot predict.
You aren't designed for that sort of thing, because humans are one thing, and then one thing really well, they adapt and they're malleable. You submerge yourself in this shit 24/7, 7 days a week, you start adapting. Start melding, moving things around you. You can't help it.
Well, you get
cults, man.
There will be at least one very noted author to come out of all of this, because somebody's going to be able to write some really sick and twisted stories.
Yeah, it's called ChatGTP.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Eat shit, Hollywood writers. Your fucking life and career is a joke.
Yep, all the late night shows stopped and nobody cared.
Oh, exactly, dude. I think Bob Iger was 100% correct. We have 50 years of beautiful, gorgeous television. Go rewatch it all. You know what I mean? There's enough reruns out there to last a man a lifetime. At the moment,
they're all on whatever streaming service you want.
Or whatever boat you take the high seas.
Yo-ho.
I'm enjoying some 70s television lately, man. Really gotten the buzz for some of that comfortable 70s television shows.
And why not, you know?
Well, I've got the Dean Martin show. I'm really into that right now. It's fucking hilarious.
Well, what's really fun is when you find outtakes from like the 30s and 40s where they drop the television voice.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, it's like, oh, no, they did speak. That's not how they spoke back then. They talked normally. That's an act they were putting on for TV. It's like, you know, we ought to go back to that. That way it's very obvious, yes, you're watching fiction on television. Although then, you know, if we had keys for that, people would take advantage of it.
I think there was a time and a place and a market for that sort of entertainment, and it's not now.
Yeah,
No one wants Lizzo, you know, dancing. But you got Dean Martin with a fucking glass full of fucking bourbon or whatever, belting out a tune with Sammy Davis. There was a time and a place for it, and that time and place is gone. It's never coming back. But fuck it, I can enjoy that for a couple hours a night and live in fantasy world, believing that, yeah, none of this shit outside's real. So, and isn't that what television's meant to be? An escape?
Absolutely.
Away from politics.
At least it's supposed
family,
to be. This
bullshit.
But now they want, you know, if anything offends their sensibilities, they want it gone, because, you know, God forbid anybody have an escape.
I think that's one of the main reasons I'm thoroughly enjoying it, because there's no politics. It's got some crass and some very funny humor. It's got some real tongue-in-cheek adult shit, you know, that they couldn't get away with at the time zone. So they had to dumb it down so the kiddies didn't understand it.
Oh, dude. But, go back and go watch some of the movies from when you were a kid, and you notice all the shit they put in there that went right over your head when you were, you know, like eight. It's like, holy shit.
Yeah, Indiana Jones is probably famous for that one. There's some great ones. But yeah, I'm just enjoying the comfy 70s style shows right now. I'm going to find a few more of them. Well, and my God, everybody was fit back then. There's not a fat... apart from Don DeLuise, but he is like the only fat guy.
Most people couldn't afford to be fat.
Yeah, like all the chicks fucking...
Most of the food was
reasonably
real too.
Yeah, the food was real. Monsanto wasn't a thing. And Dow Chemical wasn't fucking pumping shit everywhere. But anyway, yeah, that's what I've been leaning into. So yeah, the ChatGTP, it's a game changer, but in a different way. I see that there's going to be a revolution in entertainment. It's already started with YouTube, Rumble, places like that. And the average, the gatekeepers aren't there to keep you out anymore. Because YouTube is being surpassed by a lot of other streaming sites right now when it comes to content.
Well, I also think one of the best uses we're going to see for the for this machine learning stuff, I don't like calling it AI because it's not, it's not going to be having ChatGPT regurgitate the same script every night so that you're, you know, generic funny person can read it and giggle and think that they're a great comedian.
Yeah.
I mean, how many fucking writers do these late night shows have? And they're still not funny.
I think Colbert had 70.
Good God.
Yeah.
How do you have 70 writing?
I think, yeah, Colbert had 70, because I heard the Greg Gutfeld, he's comedy king right now, number one. They were talking about it, and Gutfeld has 5 writers.
And half of and them end up on the show.
And it's himself and the rest of the people on the show. There's one, I think he uses a couple of other comedians to punch up some of the jokes every now and then if they're just not working.
Yeah.
Well,
he
yeah,
usually
he
has
5
that comedian on the show that night, too. So.
Well, that, too. And I mean, if you haven't watched Gutfeld, give it a go. It's not for everyone.
Well, the funny thing I saw, because I think I may have seen that's the same interview you're talking about. He was talking about people complaining that he was mean to some of the hosts, like on their intros.
And oh, like, yeah, they,
you know,
write,
they write
they're
those
writing
jokes, right?
Exactly.
It's like, yeah, you know, he's not sitting there coming up with insults. They're giving them to him.
Yeah, we did see the same interview then.
Okay, yeah.
And it's not for everyone, but it kills 40 minutes of an evening.
It can be funny. I mean, it's hit and miss for me, but it has its moments.
Like every late night program, it has its moments.
Well, let's wrap up this article here real quick. We're getting close. So, SAMA spokesperson told the news outlet that workers were paid from $1.46 to $3.74 an hour. It is in India, but good God. Time previously reported that the data labelers were paid less than $2 an hour to review content for OpenAI. Now, 4 of the moderators are calling on the Kenyan government to investigate the work conditions during the contract between OpenAI and SAMA, per The Guardian. The moderators said they weren't given adequate support for their work. SAMA disputed this and told The Guardian that workers had access to therapists on a 24/7 basis and received other medical benefits. Okay, yeah, what's the therapist, ChatGPT? Son of a bitch.
God damn it.
it's one of those therapy apps that's just ChatGPT on the back end.
It's one of those scam fucking mental health things, the tele websites that you go to. You know, it's just YouTubers who couldn't get it big. So they become mental health crisis workers.
Yeah. Quote, "We are in agreement with those who call for fair and just employment as it aligns with our mission," unquote, a SAMA spokesperson told the news outlet. Quote, "And we believe that we would already be compliant with any legislation requirements that may be enacted in this space," unquote. In other words, standard PR response, you know, we're wonderful, please don't kill us. Yeah, I think we were done with that one.
Yeah, good.
Aryu, I don't think you're going to have much on this Digital Dojo entry other than good God, really. This is IronOS. It's a GitHub link. It's an operating system for soldering irons.
Oh, what the fuck, Morps?
I have a couple of these things. That's why I know about it. These soldering irons that are like a smart, basically they've got an ARM chip in them, you know, for doing the temperature control and all that stuff. Yeah. You know, like the little USB, the TS100, the mini wares, the pencils, V1, V2, that kind of thing. So somebody's put together an open source software package for running these things. And it's basically the same software for all of these that are essentially the same thing, just various Chinese clones of each other. So, you know, I had to put an open source firmware on mine because it did not like my USB ports that I was using to power it, the little power bricks. And once I did that, it picked up the wattage correctly and would actually, you know, fucking work. So it's an open source firmware, but they call it, it's a fucking operating system for your soldering iron. That was great. So that's our dojo for tonight. That's all I got. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and whoever, whatever we replace the subreddit with. In the IRC tonight, Al Hazard, Cyberlarge, Cycros, and myself. Are you? Closing thoughts.
I mean, as I said before, I'm just enjoying some 70s comfort TV. Give it a go if you're looking for something new, because everything else out there is shit.
That's for sure.
That's it for me.
All right. Sound effects.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
I'll pass it out.